Speaking of cleanliness and PPEs and medical stuff, we've got to talk to Dr. Steve Salzman. Dr. Steve, before we get to this data you have for us, and it's stuff you just sent me a text earlier, and you said, hey, I got to tell you about this. I've just learned about this. Some of the major hospital systems have given me their numbers, as we all expect the cases will surge here in the area. I want you to hear this, because I know that you folks in the medical community are trying to stay calm, and you're very good at that, and just sort of have your wits about you. There are two people, healthcare workers, nurses, I believe, out of St. Joseph, Missouri. They rewrote the famous Sinatra tune, New York, New York. And here's what they did. This is kind of a fun thing.
Stop spreading the germs. It's not here to stay. Because we are a part of it. Quarantine.
Yep, that's their song. This other lyrics, if you're going to make it here, you got to have safety gear. Mm-hmm. Got to keep the spirits up, Dr. Steve Salzman, Green Care Medical. And we always appreciate it when you come on with us and give us the very latest data and keep us up to speed on what's going on. So thank you for that.
Thank you for having me again. And definitely I need that as my song every time I come on now.
Or when you call me, I'm going to have that as the ringtone kind of thing.
Yes. Like,
oh, here he is.
Yes,
that's Steve. That's him.
My walking song.
You have some data for us. And as the U.S., it's now the epicenter of this crisis. We have more cases than any other country. I guess that was expected as other countries sort of started to flatten out a little bit. We are now at that point where we're seeing more and more cases, and people are getting prepared here in the Chicago area, no doubt about that. Bring us, kind of tell us what you're seeing is healthcare, the whole healthcare systems and people and everyone who works for them, prepare for what's to come.
Well, what we're seeing is weeks of work in preparation for probably starting next week, where we are expecting a large influx potentially of patients. But there's a lot of changes that have been made in preparation. They're restricting visitors. They're screening employees before you can get into the hospital. Basically, most elective surgeries and procedures have been canceled. They're converting existing units into COVID-specific units now, because some of these areas are going to need negative pressure airborne infection isolation for rooms or potentially areas for those patients. They're trying to procure large amounts of both PPE and equipment in preparation for this. They're staggering shifts as well to try to limit the exposure and loss of workforce. So basically they'll break up teams where half of them are at home and then half of them are on site, and then they switch to keep everybody fresh and safe. They're also almost like MASH, a long time ago, the show where all hands on deck, they're repurposing a lot of specialties to utilize their skill sets. For instance, myself, as a trauma surgeon and expert in critical care, all I did was run vents for 15 years. So they're taking people who have expertise in specific fields and then sending them into those units to help manage patients. And they're doing other things like transferring ambulatory services to telemed. So, again, to give care but limit exposure. We just actually, Anna, myself, my partner, we just launched also a telemedicine website, onlinemd.co, to help other providers be able to do telehealth across the country, across specialties with their patients. So a lot of things are happening to prepare.
Say that website again, Dr. Steve, online.
Onlinemd.co. Yeah, it's we're trying to allow practitioners across the country the ability to use a telehealth platform to interface with their patients.
Yeah, I saw some of the hospitals are using lobby space and patient waiting rooms. They're converting it to makeshift ERs or areas where they potentially could treat patients, just because you're really not certain about what's to come. Although I know you've gotten some new data, can you share that with us? What you've learned about how everyone? I guess it's data about testing in Illinois.
Yeah, sure. Should we talk about testing next? We can talk about testing.
Yeah,
sure.
I just thought we'd share that right off the top here, so we get to it. I know we have some other things to get to.
Yeah, no worries. Absolutely. So here's the real story about testing. There are definitely more tests that are going to be coming to market that are probably easier. I know there are self-administered tests also that are going to be coming to market soon. But again, let's be clear about what's happening. It's not necessarily just the lack of tests. There are systems that have enough tests, but yet there are many other issues, such as they're inundated with large numbers of patients now, and they have limited equipment and personnel. And the labs that are running these tests are not just running these tests for COVID, but they're running multiple other tests as well. So it's a tremendous drain to get everything done, because it's not just having the tests, but the ability to run them and then get the answers to them. But here is some real data. One large healthcare system is doing about 400 tests a day, and realistically, it's being about a 24-hour turnaround time. And when I've asked multiple colleagues in multiple different areas of the state, what I'm hearing from multiple sources is roughly anywhere from 24 to 72 hours. And these are in-hospital testing. So while they are able to get the tests, it's taking some time still. And all of this immediacy, we can get it in several minutes, across the board, that's not actually happening yet.
Yeah, we did hear from federal officials yesterday that they hope to have tests that are much more immediate in terms of results, 1 hour or 2 hour. I certainly would be great to see that happen soon, because I have a friend actually who's waiting on her test, and she says it's taken 5 to 7 days. She's now on her eighth day, still waiting for her results, as she's quarantined from the rest of her family, living in a separate room, basically, of the house. So it makes a difference. It certainly does. Let's get to this, too. That Dr. Fauci made a bit of news overnight when he came out, and he's the point person on the coronavirus for on the federal level, I should say. And he mentioned something about vaccines. There is such a rush to try to get some sort of vaccine to help control the crisis. Here's what he said. I want to get your comment.
One of the things that we are going to do that you need to understand that has been a stumbling block for previous development of vaccines, and that is, even before you know something works, at risk, you have to start producing it. Because once you know it works, you can't say, great, it works. Now, give me another 6 months to produce it. So we're working with a variety of companies to take that risk.
So that's what he's saying. They're trying to sort of speed up that ability to get these before even the clinical trials are complete, to kind of bend the rules a little bit so that if there is something promising in the pipeline, it can get manufactured now. That's not normally how this kind of thing is done.
No, it's not. But I want to really explain this to everybody so that we're clear about the whole vaccine, because we've spoken about it several times. But let's talk about concepts. First of all, there's the phase one that takes place. And basically, that phase one takes about 3 months. They put in 45 people or so. I believe Dr. Fauci actually quoted that as a number. But they take 45 people who are relatively healthy, who have no great risks, and they give them the vaccination. And then And there are several vaccines across the country at various stages in development. And then once they see that that might have some promise, that's when they extend it to the phase two and three trials, where they give it to lots of people across the board. Number one, even in the best of circumstances, we're talking about probably midsummer before they can really get those things started. And we need to be careful, Anna. There's a lot of stumbling blocks when it comes to this. First of all, you have to make sure, what Dr. Fauci talked about, that there's no enhancement, meaning that you give patients vaccination and all of a sudden we've made it worse and we've infected them further. Another thing is, there's a problem that happens. You need to start producing the vaccine even before you're sure that it works. Because otherwise, if you wait until you see it works, and like Dr. Fauci said, now another 6 months, we're not going to be able to even get it into the next season, which we hopefully are going to try to have a vaccine for. And so you need to start producing it, and it's tough to ask companies to produce something that might be a complete failure and you can never use. But with everything in place, rushing the FDA and everything else, even an act of God, you're talking about a best-case scenario. It was a year and a half away, probably still another 9 months or so away. So you hope by next season there might be something ready, but there is absolutely no guarantee of that. And I think Dr. Fauci is doing a really good job of tempering people's expectations regarding this vaccine. It was not going to help anybody today, tomorrow, or next month.
Dr. Salzman, can you hang on here a second? We have questions and other things to get to, including we have a listener who says we had a false negative test here, wanting you to comment on that. Hold that thought, though, because a lot of questions about testing and others as well. We want to get to how to eat safely during the coronavirus. You have some tips on that. And then some good news on the medical front as well. More with Dr. Steve Salzman ahead here on WGN. All right, questions for the doctor, Dr. Steve Salzman. A couple of things we want to get to first, and then I want to ask you about that false negative, because we have heard from health officials, too, about people who are asymptomatic, not showing symptoms, that you may test negative, even if you have it. For some reason, that is happening until you start showing symptoms, then you can get tested. But I want to ask you first, Dr. Steve, about the Cook County numbers in particular. We were mentioned in that federal health newser that they give every evening, and we carry it live here on WGN, when the president speaks, Dr. Fauci speaks, and all of the health officials get up there, and they talk about the concerns and how the U.S. is now the epicenter. We have more cases than any other country. They also said they said New York is obviously the big point of focus, the biggest point of focus, as they have a lot of issues there, a lot of challenges ahead of them. But they mentioned there are a couple hot spots in two counties, and they mentioned Cook County was one of them. So they're looking at us now to kind of say, hey, what's going to develop there? And you look at the modeling.
Yeah, we need to be very honest. We're going to end off the piece in a little bit with what's all the good news happening. But we have to be very prepared that New York is sort of the precursor of what's potentially to come for us. You know, New York, very much like Chicago, a very metropolitan city with lots of close person-to-person contact that occurred, you know, way before all of the mitigation and isolation strategies were employed. And again, the Surgeon General is warning us, but I think Chicago and the Illinois area really needs to brace that next week is going to be a difficult week, and we're going to see a surge in cases and definitely a surge on the healthcare system. That's not to set everybody into panic. That's just setting people's expectations appropriately.
Right. I read one story about a Glenview church now figuring out that one gathering, they had a speaker there at the church. 40 people are now sick, linked back to that one gathering. 10 people tested positive for coronavirus. Now, that was March 15th before they had the stay-at-home order, so people were still gathering at that time. But it just shows you about the social distancing rules and how that is the best way to fight this, right?
The only thing that works that we know 100% for sure, just like we did, containment and mitigation strategies, these have got to happen, and quite honestly, they need to stay in place for now.
What about that test that we have that 608 says we had a false negative? Any comment from the doctor on that, a false negative test result? You see?
Okay, so remember what the CDC and all the health officials are telling us. When we look at this critically, it seems that patients appear to develop symptoms between 5 and 12 days after the exposure to the virus. Forgetting about asymptomatic carriers, just the people who test positive. So I could see one of the things that if you test early in that you might actually be able to have a false negative because it didn't pick it up. But again, we're not sure of a lot of these things, and because of the ability for asymptomatic carriers, a lot of these are still unknowns. But the best thing to do is you don't get tested until you have symptoms. And the symptoms, a fever, cough, a shortness of breath, I think those are the people that have to test first.
Ventilators also in the news today because there is such a need for them as they prepare. They're not all being used right now, but there's a projected need for them, I think maybe a better way to say that. And I saw something, too, about how they're splitting them or allowing more than one patient to be able to use one ventilator. Is that true? How does that work?
Okay, yes, that's actually true. And I'm going to try to make this easy for everybody who's non-medical to understand. You're able to split off of a ventilator to be able to have more than one patient connected to a ventilator at a time. Now, mind you, this is not approved at any level, but it's very interesting. This has been employed before. At the Las Vegas shooting, there was an emergency department physician who I believe was a resident at the time who worked under people who had did the initial studies of using a ventilator to ventilate multiple patients, and they instituted that form of ventilatory support for many hours until they were able to get vents. But that aside, there's a lot of problems with it. You can't put a child with an adult, and you have to sort of measure volumes, and there's a lot that goes into it. But if you have somewhat compatible patients where you can ventilate them at similar pressures and volumes, then those people potentially can share events. Now, for how long? Nah, I wouldn't keep them on it for that long, but certainly in a moment of truth, this is absolutely a possibility and very well might be employed in multiple institutions around this country going forward.
Is that so? That's a new thing, right? The doctors haven't been doing splitting them in the past. Is that right?
No. Oh, I mean, yes. And the reason it's not new. They know that it can be done. But the problem is the sterility of it and the ability potentially for patients to develop ventilator-associated pneumonia and all of these other stipulations that have to happen, hooking two people up to a complicated system that's made for one person. You have to match patients, is sort of what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. They got to be similar.
So this is, it may not be necessary. It's just the kinds of things is doctors and the healthcare workers prepare for what's to come, that they're looking at those kinds of solutions. Is that right?
Yes, correct. And I mean, I pray to God they don't have to do that, because that's really dire consequences that force you to do something like that.
Dr. Salzman, we have so many questions about how to eat safely in these times, and I think it deserves some clarification. So you got any tips for us on that, eating safely? You can't ingest it. You can't get it through the food. Is that right? Because I keep getting asked that question.
Yes. So there is currently no evidence that the COVID-19 virus is foodborne driven or food service driven. This is a respiratory virus that's passed person to person. And when you look at the GI tract, the digestive tract, there's a lot of receptors in the digestive tract for the virus to cling to. So swallowing that virus, even if somebody coughed on it the last time we discussed it, the ability to contract that illness is very unlikely. More importantly is exercising sort of good discipline. So removing the food from the external packaging and disposing of the packaging, placing foods on plates, washing your hands carefully, and avoid exchanging money or exchanging sort of any closeness with the people delivering the food to maintain that social distancing. That's most important. Eating the food isn't the problem. It's just taking it from where it comes, putting it on your plate safely, and making sure you're clean before you sit down to start eating.
Most of the contractions are the people getting it because they touched the virus somewhere on something and then touched their face, right? How does it actually work?
Yes. Well, specifically with food, how it would work exactly. Somebody would either cough or sneeze, or some kind of respiratory droplets would be passed potentially onto the hand and then onto the bag. And theoretically, we talk about the virus and surface contamination. Theoretically, the virus could live on there for a prolonged period of time. That's why you want to remove everything and wash your hands afterwards. It's not going to happen from somebody necessarily coughing into your food, although I don't want that to happen either. It's more of obviously just good discipline, getting the food from where it came and changing it and throwing everything away.
Okay, that helps answer that question. We have a couple of questions, and I want to get to your good news, some of the good stuff you found in the medical community. 630, I can't get an answer to this question. If you do touch your eyes and you're worried because your hands weren't necessarily clean, can you wash your eyes, or how do you wash your eyes?
The answer is yes. I certainly, if you think you potentially inoculated yourself, I would try to wash my eyes. And again, you would probably do that with warm water or something that you can flush your eye with. But that is absolutely a potential way of transmitting the virus. And they're starting to theorize that the patients that have that red outer coating of their eye as a potential sign is potentially where they were inoculated with the virus. Now, we don't know that for sure, but that's a theory that's beginning to be formed about that. So you need to, at all costs, try to avoid touching your mouth, your nose, your eyes. All of these things can potentially serve as an opening to get inoculated with the virus. But yes, I try to wash out my eye as quickly as possible with water, warm water, and some soap if you can handle it.
I think that sounds right. 269, any comment from the doctor about using a CPAP machine as a ventilator for less critical cases that still need breathing assistance? Does that work?
Yes, it would help. So Dr. Most actually did a very nice piece about this when he spoke with John Williams. But the long and short of it is it will help oxygenate patients who have actual respiratory problems, but quote-unquote using it as a ventilator, that will not work. Patients that are struggling, it's because they develop this pulmonary failure. It's called ARDS. It's acute respiratory distress syndrome, and it looks like these fluffy clouds on their lungs, and it becomes very difficult to ventilate these patients. So it might help patients breathe better, but in terms of if they required ventilatory respiratory support, no, that couldn't work as a ventilator.
All right, some good news, Dr. Steve. You found some.
Okay, yes. I want to start by telling everybody quickly that next week is going to be a difficult week, and I think everybody needs to hunker down, listen to these social isolation strategies and mitigation strategies, and just stay put and expect that there's going to be a surge. But there's a lot of good things that are happening. There are multiple vaccine trials at different stages going on across this country. There are new testing kits that are being produced that are both easier and self-administered ones, potentially. There's multiple drugs that they're trying. The hydroxychloroquine and azithromycin had showed some promise that they're currently studying. There's that blood plasma treatment we spoke about using the convalescent plasma of patients with their virus. We're accumulating data and a deeper understanding about the virus. And the most important thing to end with is the Chinese showed us that containment and mitigation strategies markedly stop the rampant spread of the virus. And so this is clearly the single best thing today that we can do, is continue to do what we're doing and hope that we peak sooner than later.
Dr. Steve Salzman, Green Care Medical, always appreciate your help on all things medical right now and just taking the time for us. I know you're still seeing patients. You handle people who are chronically ill and people who have pain issues in your clinics. And thank you for making time for us here at WGN.
Talk to you guys Monday.
Be well.